Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, September 25th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. Pope Francis became the first leader of the Roman Catholic Church to address the United Nations General Assembly in New York today, condemning the persecution of Christians and minorities in North Africa and the Middle East.
The most basic understanding of human dignity compels the international community, particularly through the norms and mechanisms of international law, to stop and to prevent further systematic violence.
Power outages worsen in Zimbabwe, with authorities planning to ban the use of electric geysers as it seeks to save the little power that is available.
Low water levels is terrible, thereby impacting on the ability or on the output that you are able to create from the station.
And the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions says most of the more than 20,000 workers were fired without benefits recently, despite the introduction of a law stopping the layoffs remain unpaid or without a reinstatement. But employers say it's not true.
I am surprised that the ZCTU can come up with a statement like that, because employers are law-abiding citizens and they would never take a risk of being at loggerheads with the law. Employers will always obey the law.
What is the ZCTU talking about here?
I am sure what the ZCTU is talking about is the lack of...
These stories and much, much more coming up. Francis today became the first leader of the Roman Catholic Church to address the United Nations General Assembly in New York, condemning the persecution of Christians and minorities in North Africa and the Middle East. As he did in his speech to the U.S. Congress yesterday, the Pope urged world leaders attending the General Assembly to tackle global problems such as poverty and climate change and pursue policies that enhance the quality of human life.
As I wrote in my letter to the Secretary General of the United Nations on the 9th of August 2014, the most basic understanding of human dignity compels the international community, particularly through the norms and mechanisms of international law, to do all that it can to stop and to prevent further systematic violence against ethnic and religious minorities, and to protect innocent peoples. Along the same lines, I would mention another kind of conflict, which is not always so open, yet is silently killing millions of people. Another kind of war experienced by many of our societies as a result of the narcotics trade.
For perspective on the significance of the Pope's UN address, reporter Ntungamili Nkomo reached political analyst Dr. Nkulule Khosibanda of the Huddersfield University in England.
I think that the Pope met expectations by and large in terms of what you would have expected, a person of his stature, someone who has a history of relating with compassion, of understanding those who have and those who do not have, of understanding those who are in need in our society, and rightly so, of the leader of the largest Christian denomination in the world, the Roman Catholic, and somebody who's come from South America, understanding very well the relationship between the poor and the rich, but also that relationship with the environment. I think that the Pope touched on the key issues that politically many politicians find very difficult to assert themselves on and to ensure that there is There is continuity in terms of the discussions for preserving our environment, for preserving the dignity of those who are poor, and also for making sure that we live in a largely shared world, not just a world for the few rich.
Are we likely to see world leaders paying attention to the Pope's message and taking action?
I think that world leaders will pay some attention to the Pope because the Pope has a large following, not just among politicians, but also in the populations in the many different countries that are represented at the United Nations.
That was political analyst Nkululeko Sibanda of the Huddersfield University in England. President Robert Mugabe is among world leaders attending the UN meeting. After his UN address, the Pope joined with leaders from various faiths at Ground Zero, where thousands of people were killed in 2001 when planes hijacked by Al-Qaeda rammed into the World Trade Center. Tomorrow, he will lead a Catholic Mass in Philadelphia. Meanwhile, Zimbabweans from across the political divide from interviews conducted by Studio 7 appear to be fully behind their leaders' presence at the United Nations General Assembly, though they have previously complained that he was spending too much time outside the country. Ivan Chipfera reports from Harare.
Previously, many Zimbabweans have complained about the president's foreign trips. They are supporting Mr. Mugabe's presence at the United Nations General Assembly as head of state. Their fear, though, is his health, which some say is failing due to his advancing age. His recent gaffe in parliament, where he read a wrong speech to the end, left many Zimbabweans worried as to whether the president remains fully in control. Harare residents Ras Chanakira, though, is supporting Mr. Mugabe 91 to attend what is billed to be the largest event of world leaders in the years, is worried that one gaffe may not be too far away given the president's advancing age.
Yeah, I think it's okay for him to go there, but he has to be very much prepared, not doing what he did last time when he wanted to open the parliament. We just hope he's going to do it fine this time around.
Another Harare resident, Wakefield Mililo, says Mr. Mugabe must be in America for the UN meeting because Zimbabwe is part of the global community.
I mean, obviously, as the president, he was invited. But now what you are saying at the end of the day, some of these trips, I'm sure it would be much, much better for him, considering his age, to send probably a vice or just a minister for foreign affairs.
Other city residents who spoke to Studio 7 said Mr. Mugabe must use the UN meeting to negotiate with other countries ways through which Harare can settle its external debt, pegged at about $10 billion. Political commentator Takura Jangaja agrees with the ordinary Zimbabweans on this one.
So the UN is a very, very important institution which cannot be ignored. No matter if we have complaints about SADC, about other extra trips to Southeast Asia, this one is a necessary one. You have to demonstrate solidarity with the global community and understand that historically we owe a lot to the United Nations as Africans and as Zimbabwe.
Jangaja says Mr. Mugabe, as head of state and chairman of the African Union, has some business to discuss with the world body and other institutions that will be represented during the General Assembly. The general debate, in which presidents give their speeches, begins Monday until 6 October. President Mugabe will speak on Monday and leave for Harare the following day. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Blessing Zulu spoke with outgoing United Nations General Assembly President Uganda's Sam Kutesa on achievements made so far at the UN this year.
Well, I think the three processes that have been taking place in this, what I think is a very historic year and session. The most important achievement is the agreement on the new development agenda, the Sustainable Development Agenda 2015-2030. This is a holistic, inclusive, transformative, and really big agenda to develop the world, because it encompasses all the three dimensions of development, the social, the developmental, and the environmental. So that's the main achievement. But the second, and I think most important process is that you can have all these grand plans, but if you don't find the wherewithal, the money, to finance this agenda, then it remains on the piece of paper it's written. So we've been also successful in putting together financing for development conference and framework. And this took place in July in Addis Ababa. It was extremely successful. So I'm delighted that those two main processes have been successful in the same year, but maybe not in the same session. I hope that we can reach agreement in Paris in December on climate change.
And how is Africa, for example, likely to benefit from that?
You see, the sustainable development agenda is largely for developing countries. And so Africa comes in as a developing country. But also within that agenda, there are programs for landlocked countries, least developed countries that are of a special nature and are receiving special attention under this framework. For example, in the case of least developed countries, the commitment to ODA, official development assistance, for that group of countries will be cut out and it will be 0.15% to 2.20% of GNI of developed countries. So there are specific areas, but there are also broad and general areas that this whole agenda encompasses from which Africa will benefit.
That was outgoing United Nations General Assembly President Uganda's Sam Kutesa speaking with Blessing Zulu here at the VOA. Next week, we will give you a longer piece in which Mr. Kutesa talks about term limits for African leaders and related issues.
You know, I'm a great believer in constitutionalism. I'm a great believer in universal human rights. I happen, for all my sins, to be a lawyer. And I know that there are rights that are universal and fundamental. But in different countries, there are different provisions in the constitutions of different countries, whether it is in the UK, whether it is Germany, whether it is in Zimbabwe, whether it is in Uganda. And in my country, for example, we find that at this stage we don't need term limits. And I have supported that view. I don't know when Britain will come to term limits. They don't have them, as you know.
The power situation in the country is getting dire, with the Zimbabwe Electricity Authority planning to ban electric geysers, among other measures, as blackouts have become the order of the day. Most of the time, residents in the country have no power. ZESA says the power outages will remain in place for now. Blessing Zulu spoke with ZESA spokesman Fulad Gwasira, who blames the water situation at Kariba for the power shortages in the country.
Challenge that we have experienced of late is the poor hydrology, or the low water levels at Kariba power station, or Kariba, thereby impacting on the ability or on the output that we are able to get from the station. So generally, we are able to generate 150 megawatts of power, but as a result of the low lake levels, we are now generating an average of 475 megawatts, which means about 120 or so has been compromised as a result of poor water level. So this is what customers are witnessing weekly in the extent and duration of load shedding.
We have read reports that this problem might even go up to 2018. How authentic is this?
2018 is the timeline that we have, where we expect our new plant that we are introducing with the expansion of Wangwen Kariba to reach fruition.
And that was ZESA spokesman Fulad Gwasira on the line with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Zimbabweans continue to scale to greater heights in their careers outside the country. Many Zimbabweans are holding top positions in very influential organizations such as the United Nations, the African Union, and others, including private companies worldwide. In the latest of such appointments, the African Development Bank has appointed Zimbabwean woman Dr. Sipho Moyo as its director of the cabinet and chief of staff in the office of the president, a position also held by Zimbabwe's own Jennifer Susan Chiriga. Moyo's appointment was announced this week. She tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye she's honored by the appointment, adding she will do her best to help Africa move towards its quest for more development.
It's such a great honor. It feels amazing. It's also a bit of a homecoming for me because I used to be in the bank several years ago before I went to join civil society. So this is a bit of a homecoming for me. I'm extremely excited. I'm excited about the work that the new president of the African Development Bank, Dr. Aki Nadeshina, is envisioning for the bank and for the continent. And it's such a great honor that he should ask me to come and work with him and really help to implement this vision for Africa. For me, it's exciting because I always feel that my calling is primarily to the African continent. So in everything I've done, really my focus has been on moving our continent forward. As executive director at the One Campaign, I set up an Africa presence for One, which became an authentic African organization with an authentic advocacy agenda.
How are you hoping to use this position to push for equal opportunities for women in decision-making positions like the one which you have just been appointed on?
I firmly believe that the only way that, you know, women are going to really make a difference is by supporting each other. I've been appointed to this position, obviously, by a gentleman who understands the importance of, you know, equal opportunities for women. I'm sure he could have picked anyone else, but I'm greatly honored to have been picked for this position. But having been picked for this position, I in turn have a responsibility to open doors and opportunities and mentor those who come behind us.
That was Dr. Sipho Moyo, the outgoing executive director of the One Campaign, speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye from New York. We take a look at regional and international news. The Republican Speaker of the House of Representatives, John Boehner, has announced his resignation from Congress and will give up his seat at the end of October. Swiss prosecutors have opened a criminal investigation of FIFA President Sepp Blatter involving his possible criminal mismanagement and misappropriation of the Football Federation's fund. And Chinese President Xi has received full honors at a White House welcoming ceremony, complete with a 21-gun salute ahead of talks with President Barack Obama that touched on difficult issues like alleged Chinese cyber spying, Beijing's economic practices, and territorial disputes in the South China Sea.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In its ongoing effort to combat illicit drugs, every year the United States prepares a list identifying nations playing a role in the international drug trade that significantly affect our country. Countries found to have failed to live up to international counter-narcotics agreements or other anti-drug programs can face cuts in American aid. Though the president has the authority to waive penalties in order to continue cooperation in these efforts, 22 nations are identified in the latest list of major drug-producing and transit countries. Ranging from Laos to Afghanistan to Haiti and Colombia, the countries may be listed because of a combination of geographic, commercial, and economic factors that allow illicit drugs to be produced in or shipped through them, despite their government's drug enforcement efforts. Burma is one of three nations, however, that have demonstrably failed to live up to their international counter-narcotics agreements or cooperate with the U.S. in its fight against illicit drug trafficking. Despite these shortcomings, Burma will not face sanctions, as the United States has decided to issue Burma a waiver to permit support for programs in the national interest of the United States, such as democratization and human rights. In addition to the country's illegal opium cultivation problem, Burma is the largest source of methamphetamine. Much of it is exported to Thailand. It has a devastating impact on drug users, and this substance is having an increasingly negative impact on China and the countries of Southeast Asia. Burma itself suffers from a high rate of illegal drug use, one of the worst in Asia. The United States has noted steps the Burmese government has taken to curb the narcotics trade. Opium production has declined in parts of the country, and law enforcement has seized some major drug caches. Closer cooperation in fighting this problem would be in the best interest of both nations.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
ZANU-PF factionalism has reached alarming proportions, with some senior party members fighting openly on social media as the race to succeed 91-year-old President Robert Mugabe intensifies. Some tip Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa to take over from Mr. Mugabe when he vacates the presidential seat. As VOA's Gibbs Dube reports, others in the party believe that Mnangagwa is not President Mugabe's heir apparent.
Mnangagwa has over the years been associated with the president as he was his close confidante during the War of Liberation in the 1970s and has been by his side since independence from British rule in 1980. There are some in the party, like Central Committee member David Ndlovu, who think that the presidential post will not just be handed over to an individual, as it has to be decided at the next party congress in 2019.
I'm not aware that Emmerson Mnangagwa or Kombe Mnangagwa is going to be the next president of Zimbabwe. What I know is that every Zimbabwean who is 40 years and above is capable of being the next president of Zimbabwe, provided, of course, they are members of ZANU-PF. Because I'm sure that the next president of Zimbabwe will come from ZANU-PF.
Ndlovu believes that Mnangagwa is among many people who want to succeed President Robert Mugabe.
The president appoints the two vice presidents, and there's no provision in the constitution which stipulates that one of the presidents will automatically be, or the vice president will be automatically be, the president of the party.
Some critics, like international affairs commentator David Monyaye of South Africa, believe that Mnangagwa is in a good striking position to land the post if something tragic happens to the president now or when he decides to leave office.
At this stage, depends with the Politburo of the ZANU-PF. I think it is in a position to decide, even though all odds are against any other opponent other than Mnangagwa. And in other words, Mnangagwa has a much more favorable, more chances and opportunities to inherit as the heir to the throne with the blessing of President Robert Mugabe. I think this is mainly based on the post-staging that has been taking place with the removal of the then deputy president, Joyce Mujeru. And that in itself gives you a very clear indication that a plan is underway to ensure that Mnangagwa takes over in that unlikely event of dropping dead.
But he adds that there can be some surprises in the battle to succeed Mr. Mugabe, especially taking into account the unity accord signed by ZANU-PF and PF ZAPU in 1987, which ended conflicts between the two political parties.
I think the main thing is to expect much more old-timers to really be the ones inheriting as they entrust more power to the so-called tried and tested leadership of ZANU-PF. I think surprises might be the deputy who is going to deputize, and therefore one will expect the usual continuation of the 1987 unity accord, where a deputy, one of the deputy, will be in the valley.
A ZANU-PF lawmaker, Justice Mayor Wajajena, recently attacked the Higher Education Minister Jonathan Moyo on Twitter, saying he is a devil incarnate and must stop lashing out at members of the party who appear to be siding with Mr. Mnangagwa. Wajajena is a well-known Mnangagwa ally. Monyaye's views are echoed by independent political commentator Mlamuli Komo, who says Mnangagwa could be the president's current choice, but volatile political dynamics in the party may cripple his chances of landing the presidential post.
It's not given that Mnangagwa is going to take over from Mugabe, especially looking at what happened to Joyce Mujuru.
He says most people in the party are now looking into a future without President Robert Mugabe and want to feather their nest, even by getting a new leader likely to support their own agenda.
No one is planning a future with Mugabe to help because of his age and also because of him being the only leader for all these decades.
It remains to be seen whether Mnangagwa, known as Ngwena, Ngwenya, or the crocodile, will use the cunningness that he has used to survive since the War of Independence to land the coveted position as President Mugabe turns 92 next year and may not be a favorable candidate for ZANU-PF in the 2018 presidential polls. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, D.C., this is Kip Stube.
And in sports news, it's the leaders versus the challengers in the Kasalaga Premier Soccer League race this weekend. Reporter Michael Cariati tells us more about what's on the menu for soccer lovers.
The stage is set for a bruising Kasalaga Premier Soccer League title battle between table-topping Chicken Inn and defending champions Dynamos at Baba Field Stadium come Sunday. This is probably both Chicken Inn and Dynamos' biggest match at this stage so far, and none of the two teams want to lose this game. A win for Chicken Inn will bring them closer to the league title, while a loss for the Gamecocks, coupled by a win for FC Platinum over Cholocho Pirates, will send the league title race wide, wide open. Chicken Inn lead the table with 49 points, followed by FC Platinum on 44 points and Dynamos on 42 points. Dynamos coach Tonde Raindiraya admits they have a tough battle in their hands at Baba Field Stadium, adding they need to go an extra mile to come out with a good result.
We've got another tough fixture to look forward to. We are playing the league leaders, and if we won that fixture, it will enhance our chances of reducing the gap at the top. So they are a good side, a very strong unit. They play as a team, and we would need to, go an extra mile for us to get a result in Blawai.
Although Dynamos are way off the pace, Niraya is refusing to throw in the towel, saying it's not over until it's over. A big danger is lurking for both Chicken Inn and Dynamos in the form of FC Platinum's Kugona Kunenge Kudada. The Miners are 5 points behind the leaders, and a draw between the Gamecocks and Dimbare will suit Kugona Kunenge Kudada should they win over Cholocho Pirates tomorrow. However, coach Norman Mapesa is modest, saying they do not want to put themselves under pressure by focusing too much on the league title than their own play.
We're just working. We'll see how it goes come end of the season. Otherwise, if we're going to give ourselves some targets, we're going to put ourselves under a lot of pressure.
At the same time, a battle of the two new coaches are also on the cards when Capes United's Green Machine hosts Highlanders at the National Sports Stadium also on Sunday. So far, it is so good for both Lloyd Shitembwe and Cosmas Zulu. Shitembwe has 4 points from his two games in charge, and the Green Machine fans are starting to celebrate as they used to do. But will they celebrate against the Boso of Blawayo? Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
And tonight on Live Talk, we are going to be discussing about the power outages caused by ZESA. And now to recap today's top stories. Pope Francis became the first leader of the Roman Catholic Church to address the United Nations General Assembly in New York today, condemning the persecution of Christians and minorities in North Africa and the Middle East. Power outages worsen in Zimbabwe, with authorities planning to ban the use of electric geysers as it seeks to save the little power that is available in the country. That's our broadcast this evening, but right now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntungameli Nkomo. This is Chris Gande wishing you a pleasant evening, a very good night, and a very restful weekend. Good night, Zimbabwe.